Everybody, let's call this meeting to order. We'll start out today with Mr. Cunningham. There's no change in your budget. They left you alone, so you can probably hear the short version and let some of the new members know all the wonderful work you do.
Well, thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I am James Cunningham, the Commissioner of the Bureau of Mediation Services. What I'd like to do is, as the chairman has so graciously pointed out, is give you an overview of my agency and what our mission and goals are, then I'd answer whatever questions that you may have of me. The Bureau I like to refer to as the little agency that could. We're the smallest cabinet-level agency, and we're responsible for fostering and promoting constructive labor relations throughout the state. With a small staff, we cover the entire state of Minnesota. Conservatively, I believe our figures show that last year our mediators traveled somewhere close to 175,000 miles in carrying out our mission. Our primary mission is mediation. We come in and assist parties to resolve their collective bargaining disputes. One of the things that's very interesting about my agency is when we do our job to the best of our ability, you never hear about it because that means that there's not any problems or labor unrest or strikes or things of that nature. And so we do a lot of things behind the scenes. We as I said, go all over the state assisting parties. These days, just given the nature of things, helping the parties has become more and more of a challenge insofar as governmental entities are struggling with regard to finances. A lot of times employees are trying to maintain types of benefits that they've had historically over time, but yet they run into the situation that the employer simply can't afford to pay for those. So there have been a lot of challenges that we're dealing with, but to the best of our ability, we are continuing our mission of assisting parties in whatever capacity we can. So mediation is the biggest part of our agency. The next portion is we have a representation unit. It is a quasi-judicial function that we have that is primarily dealing with the makeup of labor unions throughout the state, public sector labor unions, in terms of the membership, who the primary representative is, things of that nature. We occasionally hold kind of administrative hearings that we listen to testimony and then we make decisions. The third aspect of the office is our labor management cooperative efforts. What we do in that regard is that we go out and we meet with parties kind of independent of their collective, not when they're at the table doing collective bargaining negotiations, but at other times. What we try to do in those cases is help the parties develop a working relationship that, if they have a positive working relationship, it enhances their ability to come to a collective bargaining agreement when the time is right. And so we have a lot of efforts all over the state in that regard as well. And then the fourth area that we do primarily is we maintain a list of arbitrators, neutral arbitrators, that listen to disputes, grievances, contract disputes, etc., and the neutral arbitrators make a decision, a binding decision. And we maintain the roster of arbitrators with regard to the qualifications of those arbitrators, as well as the rules that they operate under. So those are the four primary areas that we work under. Mediation is far and away the biggest piece of that. I've passed out some packets that have some information on the Bureau generally. I won't go over that. We're here, as the chairman has mentioned, with no change items. Probably for historical purposes, it's worth noting that the last time I was here, in the last biennial budget, my agency was cut 24% total, and we were able to maintain the services that we provide by doing a couple of things. We did some staffing changes, revamped the management structure of the agency. We went from a commissioner and four managers to what I think is the traditional model of a commissioner and a deputy commissioner. And then we looked at our budget hard to see where we could gain some efficiencies with regard to to travel. Our budget, the primary bulk of it is made up of salaries, our travel expenditures, and then the physical space that our office is housed in. That takes up the overwhelming majority of the budget. And so in whatever capacity we could gain some efficiency and save some money, we have done so, and therefore we were able to, again, provide the same level of services that we had in the past with, quite frankly, less people and less management. So I think we've done a good job of safeguarding the people's money, and we continue to work to increase efficiencies wherever we can. So with that, Mr. Chair, if it's all right, I would answer any questions.
Any questions from the members? I think you probably are the biggest commissioner we have in state government.
I'm the biggest commissioner with the smallest agency. That's right.
I appreciate all you do, and I know you do a good job of it. So seeing no questions, thank you very much for the overview.
Thank you.
Next, Work Comp Court of Appeals, Judge Thomas Johnson. Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record.
Your name.
Another account we don't see, but once every 2 years it seems.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Thomas Johnson. I'm the Chief Judge of the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals, and with me is my assistant, Elaine Hikas. I will be very brief, primarily because I've got a terrible cold.
That'll be fine.
But I apologize. Our agency is part of the dispute resolution process in workers' compensation. We are an appellate agency or an appellate court. The workers' compensation cases get tried at the Office of Administrative Hearings, and if any party is unhappy with the result, they can appeal it to the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. As I said, we function as an appellate court, which means we don't retry the case. We just review the transcript, the record of the proceedings and the exhibits, and then we issue a written decision. I recently made arrangements to have all those written decisions put on the website, which is something I'm very proud of because it makes it accessible to the parties and the attorneys. There are five judges on our court, and we typically are working three-judge panels. Well, one of the judges will write the decision, and then it gets circulated to the other judges for their review and changes and corrections. Then it's issued in written form. Historically, we began as the Industrial Commission way back when. We were then a part of the Department of Labor and Industry. Then the name got changed in 76 to the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals, but it was still part of the Department of Labor and Industry. Then in 1981, the legislature decided that we should be an independent agency, so it was set up in that fashion. And of course, we are then funded by you folks, which is what brings me here today. We also are not asking for any changes in our budget. We have essentially remained flat for several bienniums, and we've accomplished that through staff decreases, primarily through attrition and trying to find other ways of being more efficient. With that, I really have nothing further. Welcome any questions.
Any questions from the members? I don't have any either. I'm glad glad to see every other year. I know you fulfill a very useful function. And I haven't heard anything bad about you. So there's no controversy, and I'm glad you're getting your technology up. I hope that makes things easier for you and makes you more accessible to people. I think that's always a positive thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's always good to hear you haven't heard anything bad about us.
That's true. And, you know, and you must be fulfilling your function very well. Thank you very much.
Thank you
for your overview. And next, we have the Board of Barbers and Cosmetology. Okay. I'd like to welcome the Burnsville High School students here. It's always good to see some young faces out there. Thank you for coming.
Just for the students, thank you, Mr. Chair, and just for the students from Burnsville High School, don't get the impression that our day is as congenial and as smooth as this on a regular basis. There are days where we have a whole lot more fun, and government is not as smooth flowing and provides a little bit more entertainment. So these are good agencies that you're coming by, but every once in a while we get to have a good strong argument or discussion about how a budget is being put together.
We learn and grow through that, don't
we? Yes, we do. And it is nice to have you here, and we hope that you come back often.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
They do come every year, and if we don't get done by about 9 o'clock, I'm going to be disappearing to go talk to a big group of them upstairs. So
we'll know where you're going.
Absolutely.
Ken, welcome to our committee again.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Ken Kirkpatrick. I'm a member of the Minnesota Board of Barber Cosmetology. It's Maureen Tibbetts, our executive director. The purpose of the board is to protect the public by ensuring that cosmetology and barbering practitioners comply with established standards of education, training, hygiene, and practice. If there'd be any questions of us, I'd like to answer them if I can.
How are you doing with the transition of the merger you just went through? I know there's been a few bumps, but it seems like we're getting a light at the end of the tunnel, and you're starting to hire staff, and we're getting some more inspectors hired to go out and protect the people, like you said.
Chairman Gunther, members, it's been going pretty good. Commerce has really been helping us a lot with this, and we've been we've got two inspectors being hired this next week. We've got one staff person hired to help Maureen out on the licensing right now. I think we'll probably be keeping her down at the Commerce Department on licensing down there for a few months yet until we get our computers set up. We've got 5 new computers, so the technology side of it is coming along. We've got the software for it. We're trying to work an agreement with the nursing board to try and tie in. They have an agency in our building, or a satellite agency in our building, and I think we can probably tie into their program for licensing. One thing that I would like to ask of the committee, though, is we've got about $305,000 that we're going to be turning back over at the end of the year because we were stuck together so quick, and we're wondering if we cannot possibly get a rollover of that fund to help with our technology and some of the funding that we'll be needing.
I think we'll talk to Commerce about that and see if we can get a bill drafted to delay that money from going to the general fund until you get caught up and you can do it. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I would love to offer that bill. So as you sign on to it, seems like you engineered you were so instrumental in making sure that this transition worked out for these people. And the other word of advice to all of us here is that Ken with his shop downstairs has a lot of sharp implements close to our head. So I'd be more than happy to put that together for you, sir.
We'll work on that very quickly.
Thank
it's
you.
Good advice. I'm glad you brought that to our attention. And Maureen's been around government for a long time, and you mentioned 5 computers. How are you getting along with all those computers, Maureen? Give you a name for the record before you speak.
My name is Maureen Tibbetts. I'm the executive director of the Board of Barber and Cosmetologists and Sandlers. I do my very best with those computers. When I started with state government, that was 41 years ago. We didn't have computers. We had the old manual typewriters. I'm doing pretty good, though.
Oh, I'm good. I'm glad to hear that. Any questions from the members? Seeing none, thank you for your report. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Ha, you're next. Welcome to our committee. You're another, for this committee, you're another person that comes here very infrequently. So you're welcome.
Members, thank you very much. A pleasure to be here. With me this morning is Mary Jo Jasecki, who is our Administrative Management Director. We'd like to talk a little bit about what the Commission does and answer any questions you might have about our budget proposal. There should be a little booklet in your materials giving, or I guess it's being distributed now, being that describes the commission, gives you some information about the commissioners and what the commission does. It's a 5-member board appointed by the governor for 6-year staggered terms. No more than 3 can be of any one party, and we presently have 1 Republican, 2 Democrats, and 2 with no political affiliation. The commission regulates the electric, gas, and natural gas and telephone, local telephone services in the state of Minnesota for the larger providers. There's some limited jurisdiction over cooperative associations and municipalities, but they are largely self-regulated. Our key services are to provide a disciplined decision-making process for resolving disputes involving members of those industries, and also establishing broad policies for the industry. We also provide a public forum for discussion of issues involving those three cornerstone industries. We also provide mediation services for consumer complaints regarding those services. Broad policy objectives of the commission are to guide a transition to a more competitive telecommunications market, and secondly, to assure safe and reliable gas, natural gas, and electric services for the state. The commission is structured somewhat uniquely for state agencies, is that it has a fair degree of independence. It's to function more or less as a court in many respects, or in many instances. And the little handout here gives you some of the information on how that's accomplished. Information also includes some history about the agency if you're interested. It's one of the older state agencies in state government. Also, there's information in there about the industries that we regulate. As you can see, the total revenues for the industries are about $6.5 billion a year for the state of Minnesota. Page 5 gives you some information just on our operations. We've had a sustained level of, in terms of filings, we get about a little over 2,000, almost 2,100 filings a year. This has been the trend now for the last several years, ramping up in the late 90s. About 10% of those are cases that are disputed or involve particularly complex issues, and those are the cases that where the commissioners spend most of their time. And those are pretty evenly divided between telephone and energy issues. They're about the same number in terms of the complex, time-consuming kinds of cases. We also, as I mentioned, have a consumer affairs function. I'm happy to report that our consumer affairs complaints and call levels have been declining somewhat in the last couple of years, gradually. We think this is due in significant part to outreach efforts that we've been making to try and answer consumer questions, inform consumers, and to try and head off problems that they're having so that we don't have complaints in the first place. Our consumer affairs folks, however, have been spending more time on more complex cases, many of which have led to formal complaints or formal investigations before the commission. Our budget has been relatively flat over the last several years, as the little chart there on page 6 indicates. We do recover through our assessment process approximately 97% of our expenditures for the general fund. We bill back our time largely and expenditures to the companies that come before us and ask for required commission services, and that money then goes directly back to the general fund. Our staff size has been relatively flat and slightly declining. In fact, a study was done recently by the Michigan Public Service Commission on just looking at staff sizes and kind of comparing them from state to state. And Minnesota was found to be 48th out of the 50 states in terms of its staff size. So we're lean and mean, I guess, is the way we like to look at ourselves, and feel we're operating as efficiently as we can. We've been trying making strides along with the assistance, the great assistance from the Department of Commerce, to try and make our information about the Commission's operations more transparent to our stakeholders. We are just on the verge of providing a service whereby stakeholders can access all of the documents that are filed in formal proceedings before the Commission via the Internet. This is something we've been working on for a while, something I've been dreaming about for a number of years, and we're just on the verge of being able to do that. We think that's going to make a huge difference for our stakeholders. It's going to be a great advantage for them. We also administer the fund for the telephone assistance program. This is a program that provides credits for low-income households so that they can continue to afford telephone service. It's largely a matter of determining what credits have been provided by telephone companies and then reimbursing telephone companies for the credits that they've applied to their customers' bills. Page 7 gives you a quick view of the organizational chart of the Commission. As you can see, we can get every employee on one page. And then the last few pages is simply a summary of some of the major cases that the Commission's worked on over the last year or so. Just gives you a sense of some of what's been taking up a good share of our time. So, as far as the budget is concerned, we're flat, where there are no changes. Vast majority of our budget goes to salaries and rent. I think it's about 93% or so, somewhere in that area. And we, the information sheet here, of course, shows that we have special revenues as well. That's largely consists of the TAP fund, the telephone assistance program that I just mentioned. We also have a special revenue fund for the services we rely on from the Office of Administrative Hearings. Whenever we have cases involving formal disputes or disputed issues where there's any questions of fact, requires an evidentiary kind of hearing, we will refer the matter to the Office of Administrative Hearings, and they will develop the record for the Commission, and then they report back to the Commission, and that's the record then that the Commission, on which the Commission needs to make its decision. So we rely on their services to a significant degree. I guess that's about it, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have, you or any of the committee members might have, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Mr. Hart, I got one little question that's always puzzled me ever since I heard about it. How did the PUC decide that the proposed coal gasification plant up north is using coal as renewable energy and subject to $10 million from the RDF fund?
Mr. Chair, members, I think the Commission's decision wasn't that it was renewable energy. However, legislation was passed recently that made it an innovative energy project is the term that was used, and it specifically indicated that it was eligible for funding from that fund. The Commission looked long and hard at that issue. Was not an easy decision. But based on what it saw in the law and what it understood the intent of the legislature to be, the Commission rendered its decision to approve that, provided, of course, that the company that provided there had conviction showings of progress being made, and the burden will be on them to do that.
So by converting something that isn't renewable into something that's environmentally friendly, you can say that.
I mean, it's a coal plant, and right. I mean, it's not a renewable energy, obviously, and that's right. And this is a technology that we're still learning about, as I understand it. Minnesota certainly has base load needs. We're evaluating that on a going forward basis along with the Department of Commerce and so on, and eventually we'll reach a point where there will be a need for some base load additions, and this is an option that I think the Commission felt at any rate that needed to be on the table at least, and And that's basically what his decision was, is that this should be studied. We should evaluate whether or not it is an alternative, is a viable alternative. And if so, it should be in the mix as far as when the time comes to determine whether or not there's a need for an additional baseload plant. Mm-hmm.
Another thing is ruling that the commission made not too long ago, Vonage or Vantage was a phone company and should be subject to 911 charges or whatever, was shot down. But now the courts are hearing that. How's the progress on that? Because I also thought it was a phone company.
Mr. Chairman, that too is it's kind of a case of breaking technology and reflects how these industries are changing. The voice over internet protocol is a new technology. It's having a big impact on the telephone industry. However, the commission in its initial decision felt that based on the law, based on the statutes that are on the books, what they were doing, what the company was doing, was offering a telephone service. And the commission felt that they needed to be held to the same standards as every other telephone provider in the state. Well, the FCC has asserted jurisdiction now, and this is an increasing trend in telecommunications. Federal jurisdiction has asserted itself and has made a determination that voice over internet protocol is interstate commerce largely, and therefore is beyond the reach of state regulation. The commission has taken exception to that as far as certain aspects of that is concerned. As you mentioned, Mr. Chair, the 911 services, we feel, State Bureau, Minnesota Commission feels that that's a state issue, and the state ought to have a say in how that's done. There are also lingering issues about universal service, which is obviously a critical issue for the state of Minnesota. Minnesota's always had one of the highest penetration rates in terms of telephone service. Any state in the country are always among the top two or three. Minnesota Commission wants to make sure that continues.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And although it's really not this committee's preview, I just have a question. Seems like you brought it up as future baseload. Does the commission, look into a crystal ball and try to figure out that we're going to need 1,000 megawatts or 10,000 megawatts in 5 years from now or 10 years from now? Do you do any of that,
Mr. Haar?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the commission has what we call an integrated resource planning process. The larger companies in the state need to file every two years a resource plan that does exactly what you're talking about. I believe is it looks ahead of 10 or 15 years, forecasts what its needs, what their needs are going to be, and then also needs to provide information on what their resources are to meet that need, whether or not they need to build additional resources or whether or not they can purchase it on the market. But it compares the needs and the available resources and tries to get a feel for, what kind of resources are going to be necessary and when. Right now, in here you'll get a sense of it if you look at it. And I didn't put a lot of detail in the sort of summary of major activities, but you get a sense that later on in this decade, we're reaching a point where the major providers of electricity services in the state are going to need to be looking at either buying additional resources, building plants, and so on. Now, to say that any one particular company at this point in time definitely has a need for a baseload plant at in the year 2013 or something, we don't know that. We don't have that degree of certainty, but certainly that's a possibility. Our demand is continuing to increase. Our resources are expanding, but we need to make sure that our resource base is the proper mix, and that includes the proper mix of baseload, includes renewable resources, I'm happy to say we're doing a significant amount on that. It needs to include efficiency, demand, control. Everything needs to be on the table, basically.
I like
that.
Mm-hmm. On the table. I love those nuclear plants. started real fighters.
From a pipe fitter's point of view, they probably are very good work, aren't they?
They're what?
From a pipe fitter's point of view, they're probably a very good thing to have.
The light.
There you go. Thank you very much. I see no other questions. Very enlightening testimony, and we have finally got a chance to answer some of the questions we don't get there normally.
All right. Well, thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for coming. I'd like to make a couple announcements. The Wilder Foundation put a thing in everybody's packets. I think this should look at that. Representative Coles chairing the Technology, Bioscience, and Medical Products Division of Commerce Committee invites members from both our committee and Commerce and Ag and Rural Development to meet in a joint meeting at 12:30 in Room 500 North. If anybody has an interest in going to that, I think it would be a very enlightening meeting. And with that, are there any other comments from any members? We're adjourned.